May Thurlow, Reel 4.
Dad said, well, as long as it's only a minute. So I ran back to the front door and I thought, Mum wants to give me a kiss. She's shy, she wants to give me a kiss. And I looked at her and said, yes, Mum? She said, now I want you to remember one thing. When you go into the army, you're going to be with boys and men. I want you to remember one thing, that you keep two legs in one stocking. Yes? And I said, all right, Mum. And I thought, what does she mean? Poor Mum. You know, she was getting herself in a state. And then she kissed me on the cheek, gave me a quick cuddle, which we never knew what that was about or anything like that. They were so, you know, prim and proper in those days. She was brought up that way, very prim and proper. And you look after yourself now, and you take care. And with that, I said goodbye, and we walked down to the bus stop. I knew it was sort of 300 yards from the Benfleet Road to the bus stop. I'm waiting there for the old Benfleet bus. And we got on, and the old driver said, good morning. So I said, good morning, driver, my dad said. Where are you off to then, lass? Oh, my daughter's going into the army today. Well done, he said. We sat down. We got to Benfleet Station. And there's some other girls and lads there with cases. And a couple of them looked sad and alone. So we all got near to one another, funny enough. We had a funny feeling that what was happening. And the train came in, and Dad hugged me, which is something he'd never done. And he gave me a kiss on one cheek, and then the lips, and then on the other cheek. And he really cuddled me hard, and he said, May, I'm very, very proud of you. You're the only one that's taken after me out of all of them. My brother'd gone into the Air Force, the eldest one. My youngest brother, he'd gone into the Navy. But I was the only one that went into the Army. The rest of them was working on making balloons, the big balloons, yes, down in the Lee and Sea. Yes, I forget what they call the balloons now.
The barrage balloons.
That's the name, barrage balloons, that's right. And they were doing all right there. Two of the sisters, they were still at school, Joan and Joyce. So away we went. I got on the train, said goodbye to Dad, and he held onto my hand where the window was. A couple of the other people got in, young girls. And then I waved Dad off. And I thought, God, what have I done? It hit me then. What have I done? I've got a long, long way to go to Leicester. Never heard of Leicester, of course. And I sat there thinking, and I could feel the tears coming to my eyes. I looked across at these couple of girls and a chap in the corner seat. And the chap in the corner seat held his head down. And two girls sat opposite me. And there was a couple of ordinary civilians as well. And one looked at me and she said, excuse me, are you going in the services? And I said, yes. Are you? Yes, I am. I said, what are you going into? She said, I'm going into the army. So, oh, I said, are you going into the Royal Artillery? She said, no, I'm going into the engineers. So I said, ah. So I said to the other girl, what are you going into? So she said, I'm going into the army, but I'm going to, as one helping me cook. So she was going domestic. I can't remember where they were going, dear. I think one of them was going to Surrey. And I thought, oh yes, the cook was going to Scotland. So she was going a long, long way. And then we sat there quietly and then we decided to talk about what we was doing. What was you doing beforehand and so on and so forth. And we got to Fenchurch Street Station. Then you had to go down to Mark Lane. From Mark Lane, which is now Tower Hill, isn't it? And from there we got, I think it was Paddington. I might be wrong here, I feel sure it's Paddington that takes you to Leicester. I'd left them by then, but there was a lot of people at Paddington Station start going into the services. So I met different people that was going to Leicester, which I was pleased about. And it took the homesickness away for a while until we got there. When we got to Leicester Station, there was army personnel to meet us in trucks. And we put on these trucks to go to South Woodston. It's a massive, great big military place.
What was it called?
South Woodston Military.
South Woodston?
Yeah.
That's W-I-C-K, is it?
No, Woodston,
W-I-G-A-S-T-O-N. South Woodston. Mm-hmm. That was the station, was it?
Yes.
The train.
And it took you right through to South Woodston Military Regiment. And that's where we done our marching drill training. I loved it.
Did you? Had you got a uniform by then?
We got it while we was there, a uniform, and they were very good. You had somebody in another room where you had to put it on, and then go to your barrack room when somebody came and asked you if you'd like a tea or anything like that. They were very good. So you went over to the dining room and you got lunch and things like that.
So what was the uniform like?
It was, brownish, not dark brown, very light brown, khaki colour. And it had brass buttons. It had a belt with a buckle, which was brass. It had two pockets up here and two pockets down there. It had epaulettes. And then you got, that's your jacket, and you got a skirt, which was A-line skirt. And I was very, very lucky, really, because I had one to fit me just below the knee. So I used to love short clothes. And, but you had to press them. And they gave you an idea which was the best way to press them. And I didn't like the way they'd done theirs. So I done mine box shape. So you got the sides and you've got the pleat there coming over. And I can show you my Legion one, which I still do it the same way. So it looks smarter. And I don't know if other girls before me done it, I wouldn't like to say. But different girls was asking me. And when the officer, Subaltern, came up and she looked at them, saw you, she said, "Who told you to do your skirt like that, soldier?" And I said, "Well, I thought you looked neater, smarter." So she said, "Well, we have had other girls doing it." She said, "No, I do like it." She said, "If they want to do theirs like it, they can. You'll be allowed to have it like that." So that was it. And you got brown shoes, brown boots, lyle stockings, they were khaki. You got all your polishing gear, a button thing where you put your buttons through and do that and clean so it didn't go into your uniform. Button stick, they called that. And then two days later, you went out on parade the next day, but you didn't do any marching. You was led off to different rooms for lectures, for talks. So if I was going into the Royal Artillery, I went into the RA room. Those that was going into the Royal Engineers would go into the RE room, and so on. And then domestic automatically went over to the cookhouse, etc. And then we got lectures on their marching, how clean we kept our barrack rooms, and what time we had to be up in the morning, what leave we got, parades on Sunday to church, and things like that, yes. And our hobbies, what we wanted to do. And got to the, each one had to go up to a desk, and they got your paper out, which you got from when you first joined up. So it told you all about you. And then she'd ask you why you wanted to go into the Royal Artillery. And I did say, because my boyfriend was in the Royal Artillery, and hopefully one day that I would meet him abroad. And why did you want to go into a band? I said, because my father was a drummer and a bugler, and I would like to do the same as him, so that he'd be proud of me. And they're very, very nice, so, you know, very, very kind. That was it. And looked you over at your uniform, anything that wasn't right, they would tell you. Your hair, yes, you had to have it done 2 inches, a good 2 inches above your collar, your uniform jacket collar. If it was any lower than that, you had to go back into your room and do it again. So you had no sort of curling tongs or anything like that. Well, you did, but there's nowhere to use them because you only had that fire thing that they had in the middle of the room. You know, the old-fashioned fire? And that's it. So you couldn't use them. I've taken another pair of curling tongs for you, but you couldn't use them. And so the best thing you had to do was have a shoelace, which you could get from the Naffy rooms you had, where you could buy sweets and things like that and other items. And you could get shoelaces from there. Or if you were lucky, if you went to the room where you got your extra things, they would give you a pair of shoelaces or bootlaces. So you, more or less, you could, you know, if you were going to wear boots in the Royal Artillery, they gave you a long lace.
What did you do with them?
Well, can I show you if I take my hands off?
Well, you have to describe it, really, because...
You put it around your head, right the bottom part of the skull, yes, if you had long hair. They made sure you had most of it cut. And then you tied it up on top of your hair at the front and at the back. You tied it up so that you got the lace all round your head, hairline, and then you rolled it into the lace, and then you rolled it right the way round so that it came either side of your ears, just above your ears forward, and then you had a clip to clip that so that it held the roll in either side. So it was rolled, and the photo that's over there, that's how I had it done. Then we'd get, if we could get away with it, we used to do the Victory Bee style, so that you had a bee shape at the back, still with this lace, and then coming round on top of your hat, so it fixed onto your hat, either side, above your ear. So, you know, it was very smart indeed. And then you also had a hat called a Glengarry, which was khaki and orange. Yes, which was the Royal Artillery colour, and the miniature colour, actually, for the women. You could, if you wanted to, but it would cost you the earth for a dress suit. Nothing that you could ever afford. So only that more or less those that was promoted, a sergeant or anything like that, but not the ATS model, no. They used to wear khaki.
What was your rank? What were you called?
Sorry?
What was your rank? Would you have been...
I was private at first. You were called private during training. I did get a one strike during my marching drill. But when you was posted, that's again taken away from you. because she started training all over again.
So you would have been a corporal?
Lance corporal.
Lance corporal. Mm. Mm.
Which they called Lance Jack. You've got all the horrible jobs.
So your training proper, did you move, you know, when you started your proper training after the marching and the drill?
Oh, yes.
Yes, where did you go to that?
But we did get one leave of 62 hours.
So could you tell me about Aldershot training?
Yes, that was very, very strict. That was because of my eyesight and my hearing, they wanted me to be a spotter on the telescope identification. Yes, and we had to do aircraft recognition so many hours a day. And you had to know German aircraft, you had to know American aircraft, French if there was any, Russian if there was any, and English, and Italian. So many you had to know and learn about. The main important ones that came over to England was the enemy ones, German, and all the English and American. They were the main ones that we really had to study hard. We still had to know when we'd done aircraft recognition tests. We'd get them up on the board or on a lighting thing, and we'd have to write down what we thought they were. Excuse me. We had to know whether they were what they were, head on view, side view, and plan view. And we'd have to know each one. And we'd also had tests whether they were bombers, fighters, bombers or fighters, and also, you know, those that carried the landmines from board, you know, the German ones, all that kind of thing. French, we had to know them. The biplanes that were still in, the old Tiger Moth, the Henschel, the Lysander, which were very, very alike. The Henschel was German, the Lysander was English. And where the Henschel, their wings went forward, the Lysanders went backwards. So you had to know all them. You had to know the bomb load of the English. You didn't know actually the German. And you had to know whether they were typhoons, mosquitoes, Hudsons, so many Herefords, Hamdens, Herefords, Lancasters, Halifaxes, Liberators, so many. If I had more time, I can tell you the lot.
You haven't done too badly.
Sunderlands, the flying boat, all those you had to know. And when you was then put on spotting, because you had to go up on the kind of a small command post on spotting training, and on it also was predictors, height finders, and range finders. So we had the full team on command post. The men would be on the guns. So it was mainly women on command post, except the officers, the male officers and female officers, but mainly the male officers. And the sergeants, you know, the men sergeants, they were very strict. The sergeants, women sergeants, they had to be on the predictors and the range finders and the corporals and that. And then it's ordinary, we were classed then as gunners. The Royal Artillery, whether you were men or women, you were gunners, not private anymore.
The predictors, what are they?
Well, they're a big instrument, a square instrument. Each square, I suppose there would be about a yard in width, about 5 feet tall on the stand. Yes, but they weren't actually as tall as they had four legs, you know. And on each one, there was either one or two predictor women, you know, gunners, women, on each side. So there was, say, 2, 4, 6, 8. And they got bearings and angles and fuse setters, distance, all that kind of thing. And they couldn't fire, the guns couldn't fire until it got over to the range finders then, the range finder. And they looked at the actual range. As for myself, I was the first one that had to recognise enemy plane. I had a colleague who used to call out bearings and angles. I was the one that had to get onto the plane, shout out whether it was side view, head of view, or plan view, whether it was a fighter, or what it was, whether it was a Focke-Wulf, a Messerschmitt, a Heinkel, a Dornier, a Junkers, yeah, any of all those. You had to know what they were and what engines they had, whether it was radio or in line. I had to know every plane that was in line and every plane that was radio. So you had to know that. Mm. And then I would get on the actual plane and follow it on my telescope identification. And a terrific range, a terrific bearing, angles and bearing. And you'd have to follow. And if that one went out of sight, you got them to the next one. So they didn't just come in ones, they came in quite a few, yes. And my colleague would have to call out bearings and angles to the predictor. Then from the predictor, they had to call out bearings and angles, what fuse it would be, the height, the range, from there, over to the range, and the height finder, range and height finder. And from there, it was 1 minute completely from it left me to the firing of the gun, and the fuse is set in the gun. Number five on the gun would put the fuse setter, and number six would fire it. And that was how it would go. That was all on our practice.
So that all the instruments and the spotting would be on the command post, would it?
Yes, oh yes.
And that, the 1 minute from that to the gun.
To the gun. Yeah, so you've got four guns. If there were 3 7s or 4 5s, usually they were static, which was 4 5s, heavy attack. Yes, and you'd have to do all that in practice. And sometimes you've got to wait there in order to drop. But other than that, it would be Avril Anson would be practicing with the Royal Artillery, heavy attack, and it would have a sleeve following it. A very long, I think you've seen them where they say, happy birthday to so-and-so. Well, it's a sleeve like that, but it was a sleeve like you would have in a jumper, and the wind would be blowing through it and all that. And we got that practice eventually when we went on a firing course to North Wales.
So you were actually firing the guns?
Yes.
And that was in North Wales?
Yes, we had to do firing practice there. I was on the command post, as usual, and all the men, they were on the guns. Now, we didn't know anything about the sleeve, because we just had actually the practice Avro Anson and dummy practice there, you know, it wasn't real shells or anything she's done. But when we went to Anglesey for 3 weeks, we had a sleeve, and it was more or less flying over the sea in Anglesey, North Wales. And we'd be on that all day, more or less. Just come down for your midday meal. Well, you had breakfast first and so on, up to the command post. And then again, you came down for lunch. Very strict.
What was the purpose of this sleeve?
The sleeve, we had to get onto the sleeve instead of the plane. And you had to fire at the... And of course, we didn't know they were real shells. But you had to get on. So if I made a mistake, then and got near the tail plane or anything, then the plane would be in trouble. And so it was very, very dodgy on that score.
So when did you... Where was your first posting? Having
my
done your training?
Was Birmingham. Yes, 145 battery, and not a bigger one, 460 battery, 145 regiment. 461 and 459. Because spotters were hard to come by, sometimes I'd have to go to different batteries to take over while the spotter went on leave.
So, and that was your job always, was
always.
It, spotting?
Oh, yes. We did do... guard duty if we was off. If you got one day off, you didn't. You either got fatigues or you was put on guard duty.
So having, practised on this sleeve, what was it like to have real planes to identify? Yes. Do you remember your first sort of experience?
Yes, the first one was Adonia, and that's when we was in Perry Bar Park. In Birmingham. Yes, and we actually brought it down, and that was our first plane. It actually hit a church spire as it was brought down. A lot of them bailed out, actually, and managed to bail out, and they were well over the other side of the Perry Bar Park in the field. The plane came down, badly damaged, but didn't crash to, where it caused any, except for the trap, the pilot, so was still on it. But the other men, the rear gunner and the bomb load and all that, they saved that. But they've dropped most of the bombs out of it before, so I can't say, dear, whether there was one left on it and they dropped it or what, but there's certainly no explosion from it.
When you spotted that and identified it, were you confident? Did you feel that this was an enemy?
I got it on side view. It was on side view that I was able to get it coming right over, and my colleague coming at various angles, and then the projector took it up from there, and the rangefinder, and that was brought down. And you should have heard the excitement because you see smoke coming from it, but they had dropped, I'm sure they must have dropped all their bombs. They must have done, because there was, after you heard from different batteries around that there was no explosion from that, badly damaged, of course, but there was no explosion. Mm. So they must have dropped all them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was machine guns where there was also firing up above, mm-hmm. and so to get through.
You've obviously had a very long and varied experience, as a spotter.
Oh, yes.
And I wonder, if there are sort of outstanding events that you remember, the various places you were in. As you were saying, you went about relieving different batteries,
didn't you? Yes, yes.
Can you remember any particularly interesting, outstanding, amusing sort of occasions?
Well, I was sent to a battery in Erdington.
Erdington?
Erdington.
ERD?
That's in Birmingham.
Ah.
To relieve a spotter, that women leave. And I was sent up on my own one particular time at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Well, sent up to the battery?
From the command post, because it was so thick with fog that we could never, in a million years, have seen any aircraft It's bitter, freezing fog. And we had special jackets that we had and gloves. But we still had to go up and come on boats. Plotters were down below, and the telephonists were down below. They went down steps on the command post.